Welcome to the Far and Beyond podcast, hosted by the Contracts and Fiscal Law Department of the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School. This podcast navigates the ever-changing landscape of acquisition and fiscal law. I am your host, Major Ellie Sewell.
And I am Lieutenant Colonel Matthew Firing.
And today, we are talking about acquisition reform within the Department of War. Lieutenant Colonel Firing has graciously agreed to walk us through the changes that are happening.
All right. Well, Ellie, thanks for having me. And, you know, acquisitions, it takes a lot of different flavors. So I think it's important we just understand the baseline before we get into the nitty-gritty here, right? So when we talk about the defense acquisition system or the warfighting acquisition system, what we're talking about is really the big three.
So what are those big three?
Okay, so the big three, commonly, you know, given the name of Big A acquisitions, okay? And historically, the Department of War operated on three distinct but intersecting systems. So first and foremost, you have JCIDS, and that's the Joint Capabilities Integration and Development System. A lot of words, right?
Yeah.
And this is where the military decides what it needs, right? It's the requirements generation process that we're generally accustomed to, you know, to the extent we're at the operational and technical level. We understand that's the requiring activity, right? So the JCIDS is a larger process, generally involves like the JROC or AROC. And that is where the agency or the department understands, hey, these are the capability gaps and how are we going to close these capability gaps and really identify what our requirements are. Now, JCIDS, you know, news, it is no longer in existence. The Department of War has removed JCIDS, but understand there still is a requirements generation aspect to Big A acquisitions. And there's legislation that supports that as well. So you look at 10 U.S.C., 181, for example, and that's the core statute that establishes the Joint Requirements Oversight Council, or the JROC, which mandates the identification, assessment, and approval of joint military requirements. So I know that's a lot of information. JCIDS is dead, but there still is a requirement approval process that is needed and that is going to be leveraged by the department.
Okay, so if JCIDS is dead, you mentioned the big three. What are the other two?
Okay, so the second thing, and some may argue is probably the most important thing, is the PPBE. So that's the planning, programming, budgeting, and execution. Bottom line, that's the money piece, right? That's how we justify our budget to Congress. That's how we justify money and plan out money through the FYDP process over a five-year time frame to get money from Congress for particular programs, services, and supplies, and things like that. So that's like the second piece is PPBE. And then finally, the third piece is the DAS, or the Defense Acquisition System, or the WAS, the Warfighting Acquisition System. And this is really generally governed by 10 U.S.C. 3001 to 3066.
Okay, so why the need for the change?
Okay, so remember, Big A acquisitions, we got JCIDS or something equivalent to the requirements generation process. The other thing is PPBE, and then we have the WAS or the DAS, right? That encompasses all of Big A acquisitions. Little A acquisition or small A, that is the WAS or the DAS. So that is the infrastructure in which the department utilizes to generate its requirements and acquire major weapon systems. And for decades, these three systems operated in their own silos, right? So JCIDS would take years. It was highly criticized because it would take so long to write a requirement. Similarly, PPBE would take years to fund it. And oftentimes, the acquisition system or a small A or little A acquisition would take sometimes a significant amount of time, right? So essentially, we have a system in place, or traditionally have had a system in place, that takes an extremely long period of time to process and get weapons into the warfighters' hands. And we know, at least recently, warfare has changed, right? And by the time a system is fielded to the warfighter, the threat changes. The enemy has a say. The enemy, you know, adopts to what our systems have and adjusts accordingly. So the threat changes, and therefore our capabilities and our corresponding requirements need to change, or they do change. And essentially our acquisitions need to change to adjust to that modified threat. So modern warfare and big A acquisitions, really there's a little bit of tension there given the time frame that things take.
So this brings us to the present now. On November 7, 2025, the Secretary of War released the Acquisition Transformation Strategy. What was the bottom line of that directive?
Okay, so the Secretary of War essentially said that our traditional siloed approach, right, JSIDS, PPBE, and the DAS is vulnerable. It's vulnerable. It's not a workable system against our peer adversaries. And the strategy mandated a shift from linear industrial era procurement to a more agile or continuous delivery type of process. And it directed the department to start managing capabilities as integrated portfolios rather than isolated standalone programs. The goal was to give program managers the flexibility to pivot funding and requirements as technology and battlefield realities shift.
So strategy needs legislative teeth, though. And it looks like Congress delivered just that with the Fiscal Year 2026 National Defense Authorization Act, specifically Section 1802. Can you tell us about that?
Okay. Yeah, that's exactly right, Ellie, right? So the Department of War received Section 1802, the Fiscal Year 26 NDAA. And it's a pretty big game changer because it really acknowledges the Department of War's need, right? And it established the role of the Portfolio Acquisition Executive, or what I'm going to refer to as the PAE. The PAE is designated by the Senior Acquisition Executive. Okay, well, what does that mean? So for the Department of the Army, it's the ASALT, the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Acquisitions, Logistics, and Technology. He is the Senior Acquisition Executive, so he would need to designate, and I think that's Brent Ingraham, he would need to designate a PAE. And he supervises the PAE, right? So the PAE reports directly to the ASALT, right? So there's that level of accountability happening there. And the PAE needs to be an acquisition professional, right? Needs to be a member of the acquisition workforce under the NDAA.
So that sounds like a PEO, a program executive officer. So how does a PAE differ from a traditional PEO?
I think there is some similarities traditionally, but it's a little bit different, and I'll go into that. So traditionally, a PEO manages a specific platform, say a specific type of armored vehicle, and their funding is tied directly to that vehicle. Under Section 1802, a PAE manages a broader capability area, for instance, ground tactical mobility, and the PAE is granted decentralized authority over requirements tweaking and, crucially, cross-program funding within their portfolio. So, for example, if a new autonomous navigation AI emerges, the PAE does not have to wait 3 years for a new PPBE cycle. They can shift resources within that portfolio to integrate and apply accordingly.
So it essentially forces JSIDS, or what's left of it, the PPBE and DAS or WAS, to play nicely together at a lower operational level?
Yeah, I think so. The PAE, think of it as sort of like a central node where requirements, JSIDS, or the legacy of JSIDS, budgeting, PPBE, and execution, little a acquisition, small a acquisition, DAS, finally meet under one central node to sort of prioritize that. And it operationalizes the Secretary of War's strategy by giving that leader the legal framework to act with agility within those three aspects of big A acquisitions.
So it sounds like a big culture shift then for the Department of War.
I mean, I think it may be, right? I think it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Moving from a program-centric to a portfolio-centric requires immense trust and a high tolerance for risk, right? But in an era of rapid technological warfare, speed is absolutely essential. And Section 1802 and the PAE construct may just give us that speed that we need.
So fascinating insight and really new stuff.
Well, I'm going to nerd out just a little bit, and maybe I'm going to show my age just a little bit here, but it's actually not that new. So in January 19, Congress created something called the Section 809 panel, and it was addressing this very problem, right? It was trying to make defense acquisition faster and more agile, and they recognized that the traditional system that we discussed, JSIDS, PPBE, and DAS, were far too slow, siloed, and could not keep up with near-peer adversaries, right? So this is what the 809 panel in 2019 was identifying. So it sounds extremely familiar. And yeah. The 809 panel provided a ton of recommendations, and some of their recommendations, and I'll just, one recommendation is recommendation 36, transition from a program-centric execution model to a portfolio execution model.
Huh, sounds familiar.
Exactly, right? implement a capability portfolio framework to provide an enterprise view of existing and planned capabilities. And then another recommendation, empower the acquisition community by delegating reprogramming decision authority directly to the portfolio acquisition executives. Sound familiar, right?
So they actually were talking about these PAEs well, 6-7 years ago.
Exactly, right? And now we have, you know, especially with the most recent NDAA legislation that really adopted what the 809 panel recommended back in 2019.
So why didn't they implement it then back in 2019? Why did it take 7 years?
Well, I think the panel correctly identified that pushing authority down to the PAE would require some restructuring on how Congress appropriates money and how the military manages programs. And I think between 2020 and 2025, the Department of War implemented several of these, but sort of like baby steps, I would say. So smaller recommendations, for example, like generating new acquisition pathways, like our software acquisition pathway, and increasing certain dollar thresholds. But Congress wasn't really, didn't go full throttle on all of those recommendations. So giving a PAE the authority to move money around within the portfolio without going back to Congress, which we know is reprogramming, is a massive legislative hurdle. And I would argue that the program still exists, especially when it comes to, so, you know, reprogramming restrictions still exist when it comes to above threshold reprogramming actions. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what those fiscal restraints and reprogramming constraints and how that interplay works with the PAE. So, and I'm going to nerd out a little bit. Last night, I was looking at the draft NDAA language, and Congress was actually specifically addressing some of essentially some reporting requirements and things like that associated with the authority the PAE will have to reprogram within their respective portfolios. So Congress is addressing this, is looking at this, but I think that's really one of the big things regarding PAEs that we'll have to look to is how they can reprogram or reprioritize money within their respective portfolios.
No, that is actually, it's really interesting, especially because they are addressing these issues. So we know it's a big deal if Congress is getting involved and taking steps to address the gaps that we are seeing. Thank you so much for joining us today, Lieutenant Colonel Fiering. This may be your last podcast with us. So thank you so much for all the times that you have come down here to talk with us and nerd out, as you say.
Well, I do like contract and fiscal law. I apologize.
Don't apologize. It's hopefully why everyone else is listening right now is because they also like contracts and fiscal law as well.
Fair point. Fair point. Well, thanks for having me, Ellie. I appreciate it. And I love coming down here to contribute and hopefully share some information to the field. So,
all right. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today in this episode of Far and Beyond. Please make sure to follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. We love to hear from our listeners. Please continue to reach out to us on Facebook and LinkedIn. The information can be found in the show notes from today's episode. The views expressed today are those of the presenters, not that of the Judge Advocate General Corps, the Department of the Army, Department of the Air Force, or the Department of War.